welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And I want to go back to this because I think there's some telling statistics about the fact that physicians and nurses in this nation are at a crisis level. And this is from the Mayo Clinic, Sandy. The Mayo Clinic research has found that 62.8% of American physicians are experiencing at least one symptom of burnout, up from 38.2% in 2020. So just, and maybe it was COVID itself, clearly, Sandy, COVID itself that exposed this.
Well, COVID exposed a lot of weaknesses in our healthcare system, and it also stressed the healthcare system. But the healthcare system was already being stressed by the trends that were embedded within it. Particularly, I think the trend that is causing physicians and people who are actively participating as healthcare providers, they're losing the validation that they used to get from actual interaction with patients and to become both familiar with and close to their patients so they could feel the satisfaction of helping people get well. And now it's much more of a mechanical process with lots of, you know, the questionnaire that everyone gets the first time they sit down when they come in the med, and every single appointment is the same. You know, you get to the black lung questions and the answer is no. But I mean, the system, it's become so systematized, and I think that was installed to some extent because of Medicare and Medicaid government requirements, and then also by all the insurance requirements in order to have things be covered. And you know, you can say, well, a medical system is going to want to pursue things that are covered by insurance so they can make a profit. Well, they also want to make sure that what they provide you is covered by insurance so it doesn't cost you money. They don't want to just come in and willy-nilly spend a bunch of money that then delivers a big bill to their patient. So they're thinking about the patient. I mean, it's kind of a joint thing. They're thinking about the bottom line of their institution, and they're thinking about the patient's ability to pay. But the end result of that is there's all kinds of red tape associated with figuring out what kind of medical care people can get. And then the amount of time that is allowed for each appointment is very finite. Doctors are expected to see a lot of people,
right?
Because there's a shortage of them, because now most of the doctors, at least in Milwaukee, but around the country, are employed by hospital systems. They aren't self-employed. So they have more expectations imposed on them by their employer about how busy they should be and how many patients they should see. And so the sum total of that, I think, is that healthcare workers are getting far less satisfaction out of their jobs. They're being asked to do far more. Some of them have made choices themselves. Many nurses now work regularly 12-hour days. They get paid more as a result of it. But a 12-hour day is a long day in a busy emergency room, for instance. I mean, is that going to cause burnout? Well, you would think so.
So Sandy, it says across the country, doctors are physically exhausted, emotionally drained, and discouraged. They are at elevated risk of mental health conditions and substance use disorders.
Yeah.
Some doctors who enter the field to heal sick community members and save lives no longer believe their work matters. This goes, though, Sandy, to, I remember when my own doctors in the community where I lived, you know, you could go to that doctor and it's kind of like a friend. You could have the conversation with him. He would take a little time out. And so what ran them out of business was the big hospitals, right? I mean, the private guy, you know, the Marcus Welby kind of guy, if you will.
Well, you know, the various specialties earn different amounts of money based on the kind of insurance collectability and chargeability their particular functions have. So some specializations, radiology, anesthesiology, a bunch of these are very high paid. Some of the lowest paid professions are the ones that are the portals to the medical system. So our internists, our general practitioners, our family practitioners work very hard. They see many people, but they are not at the high end of the doctor medical scale in terms of compensation. So, And the reason they've decided to do what they do is they want the satisfaction they get from having a relationship with a patient. Does an anesthesiologist have a relationship with his patient? No. The patient's asleep.
Right, right. You know,
but does an internist or a general practitioner? Absolutely. And they're doing it because of that interaction that they crave and want and find it's compensating to them in exchange for maybe making less money. And they aren't getting that anymore, or they aren't getting as much of it anymore because the way the system is set up. You know, the physician's assistant spends more time with the patient than the doctor does.
So, Sandy, how do we, and then the other thing is the nurse practitioners who are, you know, steps away from becoming doctors or whatever, I guess.
Same with the physician's assistants. Both of those people are very capable medical providers, and in some countries and in some places and in some circumstances, they will provide all the services that a doctor otherwise would in this country, and they will in times of emergency here in this country. I assure you that during the COVID crisis, physician's assistants were providing a great deal of medical service that would otherwise have been provided by doctors.
So Sandy, what is the answer to getting out of this? And I'm sure they're combing the world to get the nurses and the doctors to come in. You know, whenever I'm at Frederick or whenever I'm at a hospital, whether it's for me or for someone I love or somebody I know, you look and see who the doctors are, and, you know, many of them
are foreign.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think obviously ultimately it has to do with the sense of
people aren't the attractiveness, going to become doctors anymore.
Well, the attractiveness of a profession has to do with how many people are drawn to that profession. Medical school is an expensive process in this country, so that you aren't going to put yourself through that unless what you get out and graduate into is something that you really want to do. And some of what takes you there is the desire to get out and make money, but some of it has to do with getting out and doing something that was truly satisfying to you. And so I think, I just think there's a problem out there in the medical industry in terms of the way service is being provided and the way providers are being utilized in the process of providing service. It's all getting very systematized. And systematized businesses are not that attractive to someone who's going to spend 4 years in graduate school and $200,000 of tuition in order to get their degree.
You know, I just thought about that. $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, whatever it costs. And so maybe that's one of the main reasons the high cost of that degree and of becoming that doctor. And so you couldn't maintain your own little business because you had to pay all this money back. You would think that when you need doctors and nurses, you would find a way to supplement people becoming doctors and nurses, right? I mean, wouldn't you?
Well, we have limited
financially. Yeah, I mean,
we have I don't know how many medical schools there are in the country, but
we don't have enough.
I don't think there are 50. Every state does not have a medical school, and there are not so very many private medical schools. In Wisconsin, we have two. We have the Medical College of Wisconsin, a private school, and we have the University of Wisconsin, a public school. That's unusual. And our Medical College of Wisconsin has lots of people coming from other states where the number of seats in the medical school are too small in number to provide seats for everybody. So I think one of the reasons for the shortage is we only can produce so it's like the refinery the limitation on refinery for gasoline. We can only produce so many doctors a year, and we're producing that many year in and year out. But the demand for doctors has gone way up as you and I get older, and the medical process has to deal with a bunch of more geriatric medical problems. The demand for doctors goes up. The medical profession has become more specialized. It used to take fewer doctors who provided a broader array of services. Now it takes a specialist in every part of our anatomy. There are nephrologists. There are, you know, there's a specialist for everything now. And that specialization has caused us to need more doctors in order to provide the full range of services.
You know, on the one hand, it is extending the life of people, all these different specialists that you're talking about, but it comes with a high cost, right?
Well, and the longer the life, the more medical care they need, right?
Yeah. So that's a negative sum game. It's not gonna, you know.
Well, it's gonna be hard to solve, but I think it needs to get solved by first of all solving the cost of medical care problem, and then it needs to get solved by changing the expectations and changing the expectations of hospitals, for instance. Right now, hospitals are spending a lot of time working on shaving their payroll and trying to control costs while they also make substantial surpluses. So the private hospitals in Milwaukee are now currently accumulating substantial surpluses each year. They aren't profit hospitals. They're not for profit, but they're allowed to accumulate surpluses that they can turn around and use for capital improvements, and they're making lots of capital improvements.
Well, there's no question. You can go to any hospital, and they're constantly building and upgrading. And it's certainly not any lack of resources to deal with whatever it is, the newer technology that hospitals crave. They're certainly getting all those things. So, let's do this. We've got to go to a break. And when we come back, we'll go to the phone lines. But, Sandy, after that, I want your thought on, the development with the 8 billion people of the world. We're going to reach 8 billion people. And is that something that should be frightening? I don't know why people seem to be so frightened with the fact that there are going to be 8 billion people in the world. It's as if the world can't sustain 8 billion people. I don't think that that's, I think the world is capable of dealing with a lot more people than 8 billion, but then what do I know? That's why we got Sandy here.
Wow. Really?
No. We got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll leave it up to him.
We can figure it out together.
Yeah,
though.
Figure out all those.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Well, you're giving me 5 minutes. I'll get the solution.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to Dave from Milwaukee. Hey, good morning, Dave. How you doing? Thank you very much for the call.
Hey, Earl. Hey, I don't know what the big problem is with figuring out how to deliver medical care. How does Cuba do it? And Cuba has been under siege from big bully United States for 60 years with the embargo and everything.
Yes.
And yet they have a world-class medical system.
You're right.
They even export, they send doctors around the world, most recently during COVID.
You can go to Cuba if you want to become a doctor for free.
Exactly. They even take American students.
Right.
Well, they train all of their doctors. They train their doctors for free. They internationally, anyone can go there and get a medical education for free.
Yeah.
And so that takes away that, 250,000, $400,000,
cost.
Yeah, for their education, and also they're I'm looking at I looked up doctors per capita online, and Cuba's at number one, 8.4 doctors per capita. and United States is 2.6.
And you know what, Dave? And it doesn't take as long in Cuba to become a doctor as it does in America. What is that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how long it takes in Cuba. I'm recalling, you know, they also have a pharmaceutical industry. They make their own vaccines. You know, if they could get, you know, if there wasn't this embargo and they could get other substances that they need to make medicines, you know, they could do more. But I'm recalling Michael Moore did one of his documentaries where he took the 9/11 rescuer people who had medical problems,
right.
And they couldn't get medical help in the United States. He took them on a boat to Cuba, and these people were crying at the help that they got, and they stocked up on the medicines, inhalers and stuff, that it cost them like 10 cents for each inhaler, and in America they were like $200 or something.
What you pointed out is the extent to which the American medical process is broken. You know, we've set up a medical process that is this third-party payor system. It's private providers. Well, capitalism wouldn't have to have failed if we had, if you know, capitalism. For instance, Medicare, the Medicare system could prevail, and we could have Medicare for all, and we could end up with an entirely different medical system if we had education. If we had the European system of free education for as long as you qualified for the education being provided, you could
right.
get medical education for free, right? So there wouldn't be this barrier to the entry to doctors, which is we're going to ask you to go deeply into debt, which means that you have to chase after medical specialties that will pay you a bunch of money, which puts then a medical system that is so embedded in systemization instead of medical service. We still have some places, Kaiser Permanente, Mayo, some other places that are clearly married to the process of providing patient care and the whole patient as the patient care, not just the specialized service being provided. And that's clearly... the Cuban system and a number of the other countries' medical systems are much more holistic. They're looking at the benefit and welfare of the human being. They're trying to help them live healthily. And they've got a whole different concept of the process of being involved in medical care and the medical system. So, you know, I think we have to start... Well, there's so many things broken about it, and the question is, how do we fix it? Well, I think we have to start by fixing the part that relates to the availability of medical care to the public and the availability of the medical specialty to the specialists. And one of them involves education costs, and the other one involves the third-party payor system, which we have, which is so terminally broken.
Well, I think the biggest problem is it's a profit-driven system. You know, you guys are complaining about how much, you know, how little time doctors spend with the patient now. You know, Earl was talking about that. And it's because, you know, the corporations that own these systems want to jam in as many patients as possible for greater profits.
I can't disagree with you on that. I know that's the case. And
well, you know, profit, that's a technical term, but, you know, like the hospitals we have in Milwaukee are private, but they're not for profit. They are not for profit, and they earn surpluses possibly. They do all try to make sure that they make money and don't lose money, and they are all coming out with surpluses. And the systemization is a function, I think, of a variety of things, but of course it is also the big hospital system and what it is that they're aiming themselves at. And so it is true that we have gotten so that more and more of our medical system providers are parts of very big systems, so that in Milwaukee more and more of the doctors you go to see are doctors who are employed by either the Frederick Health System or the Aurora St. Luke's system, Advocate Aurora, or the Ascension system. We have three big hospital systems, and they are providing most of the medical care in the community.
You know, back during the old times, you would see doctors who would remain doctors into their late 60s, 70s. They would remain doctors. Today, you don't see the doctor. The 75-year-old, the 70-year-old doctor, it's their lifespan in doing what they do is shorter, Sandy. Or it appears to me.
Well, I think it has to do with the desirability of what they do. People do something late into life because they enjoy getting up and going to work
that day.
Not because
of the money part of it.
And it's not because of the money part of it, because when you're 70, you've got it made, basically.
Right.
So it really has to do with satisfaction. And it's satisfaction that's leaving the system, the healthcare system, because of the compression of and all the pressures that are a part of it. You know, most of the other countries in the world have capitalistic hospital systems, at least, in terms of private. But I don't think it's the private so much as it is the way we compensate and pay for service.
Hey, Dave, thank you very much for the call. But I got to correct Sandy. I don't do it too often. But he said when you're 70, you got it made. Am I doing radio because I have it made or because I'm making so much money? Which is it?
You like coming to do the show.
Gotta go to a break. He sure is not for the money.
I hope it's not.
We gotta go to a break. Curtis, hang on. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. At 844-967-2789. It's 844-967.
I just want to ask Connor, is that the music that is Tinkerbell? Is that when Tinkerbell appears in Peter Pan that music is?
No, it's George Benson.
No, man.
Never mind. You're real off with that one, Sam.
Yeah, it was really off. I think it was a takeoff on Tinkerbell.
Imagine mistaking funk music for a Disney soundtrack.
Are you sure Sandy is aware of what funk music is?
Superfly.
Yeah.
Of course.
I know funk
Superfly.
Music.
Superfly.
The Meters.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844. He knows funk music and he brings up Superfly.
Superfly.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. I don't know, Sandy. We got to watch you.
It's just got to play better music
Sunday
on the show.
With Sandy Williams. Let's go to Curtis from West Dallas. Hey, good morning, Curtis. How are you? Thank you very much for the call.
Good morning, Earl. Good morning, Sandy. How are you guys doing?
All right.
Mike, hey, listen, Sandy, tell Sandy's a little off. I don't want to be mean, but as far as the medical in Wisconsin, there's a hospital in Oconomowoc that's half full because the medical system in Wisconsin had to hide money, so they built that Taj Mahal on 94 in Oconomowoc. My niece works there, and she told me that the hospital's only half full because they've got to hide the money because it's not for profit, which is true. But to hide the money, they buy more. But another thing is a lot of the hospitals right now, she told me, this is just recently, they want to pressure her because she's a psych nurse, and she's only allowed 15 minutes with the patients. Anything more than that, the supervisor writes her up. So that's how the medical system screwed up.
Yeah, I don't think we're disagreeing. I mean, I think the systemization and, like I said, the surpluses allow these hospitals to make capital improvements, and to some extent it's caused them to build capital improvements that weren't very necessary. And you're right, that Summit, I think it's called the Summit Hospital, the one that's near Oconomowoc, is way under-occupied.
Oh, yeah, and they did that on purpose because they had to shell money. Because otherwise, it shows money. But it's really sad because I lost my job a year and a half ago because of my vision, We got a new computer system work. They pushed me out the door after 33 years. And I tell you right now, it's like I have no health insurance. And I went to affordable health care. But they still, you know, what they give you is nothing, because I had to go to emergency this summer and it cost me $1,600, and they only paid $150.
And how old are you?
I just turned 55.
Okay, 55.
55.
And so he's got a ways to go before he gets to Medicare. And this is what you're talking about, Sandy, where, and there are a lot of people like Curtis, and even younger, who don't have health insurance.
Curtis, how do you provide for health care? Do you have health care insurance you're carrying, or are you riding there?
Well, I went to the state for Common Ground, but because I have a duplex and I get a rent, so I fall into that category of, like, I got a little bit of income, but not enough income. So I got the silver, but if I go to platinum or gold, it's going to cost me $400 or $500 a month. So if that costs me $400 or $500 a month, my rent that I get from my duplex, I wouldn't pay my taxes at the end of the year then, because no one's hiring me because I can't apply online because I'm visually impaired. I can't even see I was born with no center focus. You understand? I have a flip phone, and the disease I have runs in my family. My brother can only see shadows, and he lost his business down at the courthouse in the safety building after 26 years because the courthouse is sinking. And he had to go on Medicare, but he's 62, so he was able to get Medicare.
You know, Curtis, this does go to what Sandy is always talking about. And you and your family are a prime example of why we as a society can do better and needs to do better. Right? I mean, this is the malady that you and your family have, but there are others who have other maladies. You can't afford it. And, you know, Common Ground Healthcare, God bless them, I had it when I was about 50-some-odd years old, but all I could get was the silver. And
that's all I can get.
The gold or the platinum, which gave you the options you couldn't afford.
I can't afford it.
Well, I think what's wrong is that we've got so many working Americans who are fallen to a donut hole. They don't earn, they earn too much to qualify for the kind of medical support that you can get if you earn essentially nothing, but they earn not enough to afford to pay for health insurance and actually get into the system in a way that would make the system really responsive to what they want. I was talking to a couple of friends of mine that are both of them from abroad, but they fit well into the median family, the $75,000 income family, but they were in complete agreement that they live in terror of getting sick because they can't afford the medical care that would be required, because they can't really afford the medical insurance that would get them protection against it. They have a huge deductible. They have medical insurance, but a huge deductible. They can't afford child daycare, and that was a problem for them when they had to have it. And retirement is something that's imponderable to save for, and education as well. And they said, you know, we could go back to Poland, and we would have all that. Now, they're staying here for other reasons, but everyone will say, well, yeah, they can go back to Poland then. But no, why should our country have so many people, working people, living in terror of their futures and of tomorrow with respect to health care? It's just badly broken.
Well, you know, when the Affordable Care Act came into focus and the pushback that President Obama received, even knowing that the origins of that was with Mitt Romney and people who said no and said we can't afford it, that's at the root of it. Because the American people right away said, we can't afford that. Right?
Well,
it turns out we can't afford it.
Well, I mean, if the mandate had continued, then health insurance would be far cheaper than it is, because all sorts of healthy people would be covered. The insurance pool would be huge. But, you know, that was an ideological thing. That wasn't even the healthcare insurance industry that wanted to get rid of that.
Right.
That wasn't K Street. That was ideological craziness that wanted to fight back and call that a government mandate. It was pure and simply the out party deciding that they could attack the in party, the Democrats, on an ideological basis. They did. They cut off the country's nose to spite its face. Because if that mandate had continued, things might be working today. the mandate didn't continue. Healthcare insurance now is kind of a Pyrrhic kind of an insurance because the deductibles are so large. You can spend $10,000 to $15,000 a year on health insurance and still have a $5,000 deductible before you can get dollar one of insurance coverage. How many families can afford that? And how much income would you need to afford that?
You know, I remember I had the Affordable Care Act when it first came up, and I had a gold package, and it was $5,000 deductible.
Right.
For me, and then another $5,000 deductible for my wife. So even though you had this insurance, come on, Sandy.
Yeah, I mean, what the insurance amounts to now is it's insurance against bankruptcy. You aren't going to go bankrupt, but you're going to go broke
right. Because
of your health insurance. But you aren't going to have the catastrophic debt because you are going to have this extraordinary medical cost insurance that's being provided. But that used to be called extraordinary, you know, that was what you had on top of your insurance when you had Blue Cross Blue Shield. I mean, we just keep trying to re-cooper our medical system to make up for the fact that we don't have medical care somehow provided for all. And it's the same problem we have with education. We have this political debate about forgiving student debt when student debt wouldn't even exist if we had broad-scale and low-cost public education for as long as you can satisfy the requirements for that education like they have in most developed countries. So we're trying to fix something that's broken by coopering it up instead of really fixing the break.
Curtis, you got one more thing you want to add?
Yeah, I was going to tell you my little story. When, you know, Sandy says that, you know, you have to really be careful. Well, this summer I was bike riding, and the car almost hit me. So I jumped the curb, and I flew into the bushes, and the branches went right through my shoe, right through my foot. And it cost me $1,800, and they only paid, Common Ground only paid $250 of it.
Yeah.
So it was like, why? I know what you're saying as far as, like, and I do have the $5,000 deductible, what you're talking about. I have a $5,000 deductible, and then $10,000 if I get hospitalized. So sometimes it's like, it's damn if you do, damn if you don't, if you have insurance, you know? So it's like, but you have to have something, you know?
Well, again, that's the worst part about it. You, while you were working, you had all of that. And then once you're not working anymore, you don't have any of it. And for people who don't know the pain that causes for people who don't, Sandy, then people who then don't go and see their doctors.
Well, yeah, that's why the emergency rooms are filled, because people can't afford. They can go to a doctor, but their theory is, if he finds out there's something wrong with me, I won't be able to afford to pay the bill anyway, so I'm better off just sticking my head in the sand, hoping that it goes away like a cold.
Yeah.
And we have lots of the American public doing just that, which means they ultimately present themselves to the medical system with a far worse condition, which probably taxes are more acute care portions of our healthcare system.
No question. But Sandy, let's go here because I wanted to go here. I was watching 60 Minutes last night, and they were talking about the fact that our nation is going to sell Australia 4 nuclear-powered subs. And I was just, it made me stop and say, and you just clarified it, just because it's their nuclear-powered subs does not mean that they're going to be armed with nuclear weapons. But it made me stop and see and think, maybe it's a double standard that we are doing in this country. We can tell others that they can't have these nuclear things. We, the United States government. And yet we can do whatever it is we want to do. So when you hear people say that our nation, people are jealous of us or they don't like us because of our democracy, it's a little bit more than that.
Well,
if I'm one of those other nations who is saying, hey, you're telling everybody what we can have and what we can't have in a world that it's free. It's not the world that is controlled by the United States. The world is free. And that's the way it should be. But yet, we can tell people what they can't have. We're not going to tolerate it. We're going to do this. And then you turn around and see what we're doing.
Well, we certainly operate on
do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that is basically the way we parent. And what are we doing?
Parenting the world anyway? Right.
And the fact is that, you know, I'm most troubled. The news today was that Kamala Harris is in Philippines. Talking about how they're going to solidify and fortify a new
put more weapons.
New naval base there, more weapons. We're going to spend lots of money actually providing the Philippine government with more muscle as well as ourselves to withstand the Chinese. What are we doing jumping in bed with the Philippine government? The Philippine government is undoubtedly from the standpoint of what Duterte stood for, stands for a far lower standard of human rights than the Chinese government that we're getting all festooned about. And we have forever, since World War II, we've sort of decided that the government, that the world is a potential client and a potential customer of our munitions systems. And, you know, we call them client states, and the USSR had its client states. The USSR sold MiGs, for instance, to India. India was a client state of the USSR. We made sure that Pakistan started out buying some munitions from the USSR. We didn't want that to happen, so we jumped on board and became the client provider to Pakistan. Now, which do we choose the right governments there? I mean, Pakistan's a pretty fragile place, filled with a lot of terrorism, actually. But we've helped them arm themselves. They also are a nuclear country, incidentally. And so, you know, we've gone all around the world making decisions for reasons that are very strange. And we've jumped into bed with some very strange operations. Saudi Arabia. We're firmly in bed with Saudi Arabia. Not a very nice place. And now we're deciding that we're going to make all of our decisions by thinking that we want to hem China in a military way. The main reason we've decided China's a bad actor, we can come up with a lot of revisionist reasons why. The main reason is that they're achieving economic power and might that is threatening to put the U.S. economy into second place.
So, Sandy, how do you, after the President of the United States just sits down with the President of China, and they have a conversation, and they try to work things out, and then the next thing that comes out is you're gonna arm the Philippines? I mean, what is that?
Well,
I know. Listen, we got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Show as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. Oh, it's Monday.
Well, I thought it was Friday.
Yeah, well,
that's okay. I thought we were off the air.
So it's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And also because it's Fridays with Sandy Williams. So at least it's not that bad. But I will say this, and I was talking about watching 60 Minutes yesterday. And just, you know, I don't understand, you know, I do understand our policy, Sandy. I do. But it's not good.
Well, okay. You know, a nuclear navy, a nuclear sub doesn't mean nuclear missiles. I mean, the naval vessels can carry missiles, but by a nuclear sub, what they mean is something that is driven, its propulsion is driven by a nuclear reactor that heats the water, that creates the steam, that creates the electricity that drives the...
Almost never has to come up.
Never, yeah. can surface very, very rarely because the nuclear power doesn't need refueling at all often, and it can generate its own oxygen out of its surrounding water. And, you know, it's got all these systems. So it doesn't have to surface very often, and it's tactically capable of operating at a rapid rate, at a deep level, and for sustained periods of submersion. So it has tactical advantages. But I'm just more troubled by the fact that from an international policy standpoint, we're getting involved in now the sort of arms race that was the Cold War with the USSR. Now we're deciding to funnel that in the direction of China. China has a much bigger economy than the USSR did. It has much more capacity to match us in an arms race. It means that our arms race with China could be ginormously expensive. Here we are already spending north of $800 billion a year on our military, and we're talking about getting into a new and larger arms race. We're talking about arming the Philippines. We're talking about, first of all, we've more or less defined China in our behaviors as not only an economic competitor, but as an adversary from the standpoint of strategic military activities. And when you define someone as an enemy, they become your enemy, like I've said before. So strategically, if we're treating China like an enemy, they will treat us as if we are their enemy. And that's what creates contests for armaments, right? You have to arm up. You have to play chess. You have to assume the opponent's going to do the worst thing that they can to you. So you have to build up a defense against those things. It's a spiraling cost that is geometric in nature, and so we should understand that because we're the most powerful country in the world, when we take an action, some other country that feels that they are possibly our enemy because we've defined them that way will have to try and take an equal and opposite reaction. So we talk about arming the Philippines and creating greater military might there. We arm Taiwan. You know, it's true, China is arming up the South China Sea, but why are they feeling compelled to do it? Is it because we're flexing our muscle in that area? And if so, why are we flexing our muscle there? If China's our enemy, why are we flexing our muscle off their shore? You know, it's a chicken and egg proposition, and we should all be aware of that as American citizens, that these arms wars are not, you know, when we present the facts to the American public as if China is an aggressor that is causing us to have to do these things, we should take that with a grain of salt, because their conduct is no more aggressive from our standpoint as our conduct is aggressive from their standpoint. And we need to understand that when we carry out our activities around the world.
Hey, Don, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Pretty good, fellas. I'm enjoying your program with Sandy. I wanted to go back to healthcare a little bit. He mentioned about they took the mandate off. What do you mean by mandate, and who are they?
Well, it was Congress.
A good question.
Yeah, it was Congress. The original Affordable Care Act required a mandate that everyone buy health insurance or pay a tax penalty as the result of not having insurance, and the court struck that down. Saying that the mandate.
Okay. Now I remember that a little
yeah,
bit.
So the Republicans were otherwise constantly talking about voting it out of existence, and the mandate would cause everyone to be in the insurance pool buying insurance, so that young people who were healthy would also be insured, and they'd be paying a premium. And
that's actually a good idea.
Yeah, and the result of that is that health premiums for everyone go down because you've got a much bigger insurance pool. It's the reason. It's the reason why automobile insurance is affordable.
Well, sure. You know that that's a very good idea. I suppose there was a lobby. I suppose, you know, they got these lobbies, insurance lobby that probably was behind it too.
No, the insurance lobby wouldn't have been behind it because everyone would have had to carry insurance.
Yeah, that's true.
I think it was strictly an ideological thing, and like I said, the ideology caused the country to cut its nose off and to spite its face.
Are you familiar with Part D?
Yeah.
There is a mandate on that. They say that if you don't get insurance for your medicines.
Yeah.
That they will give you a penalty for any time you're off of it. So how come they have a mandate for that?
Well that isn't a tax have... that isn't so, a tax penalty. That's an insurance.
So done,
penalty.
Man. I wish we had more time. We got to go to a break. Thank you very much.
You betcha.
We'll
you betcha.
Right
bye bye.
Yep.